Welcome to the Annie Jennings PR Poker Pro Interview Series, a poker how-to podcast series featuring the greatest and most accomplished poker players in the poker industry. My name is Annie Jennings, host of this series, as well as host of the brand new internet radio show on hold'emradio.com entitled Annie Jennings and Fast Eddie Talk Poker. You don't want to miss that. Please visit us. And my guest today, my wonderful guest today, is Lou Krieger. He also has his own show on hold'emradio.com. He'll tell us a little bit about that show momentarily. But you can listen to me on Hold'em Radio at 8 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday nights. So go ahead and check it out. Meanwhile, as I just mentioned, our guest today is Lou Krieger. Lou is the author of numerous books on poker, including Poker for Dummies, The Poker Player's Bible, Secrets the Pros Won't Tell You About Winning Hold'em Poker, which, by the way, is excellent, one of my favorites. And our topic today is based on Lou's book, Internet Poker, How to Play and Beat Online Poker Games. So as usual, we're going to get lots of great insider secrets. This will be packed with great things you need to know on how to take home the big one of these days. Welcome, Lou, to the Poker Pro Podcast Series.
Hey, Annie, I'm beginning to feel like a regular on your podcast. It's great to be back.
I got to tell you, my listeners absolutely love you. The feedback is incredible.
Well, if they love me, they're going to love the radio show that I do with Amy Calistri.
Right.
It's every Thursday night on hold'emradio.com. It's 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Pacific Time, and some other time everywhere in the world.
In between, yeah.
And we talk poker for an hour every week, and we have guests, either name professional poker players or authors usually, and it's always a good lively show.
Oh, I can't imagine. Well, I always say you can't learn too much, you know, about playing poker and trying to improve your skill set. And all of us, I know all of everyone, the millions of players who love poker are always looking for more. We have a thirst. We have a thirst for information, and shows like yours and, of course, mine help quench that thirst. And, of course, today's topic is amazing because online poker, I have a question for you. First of all, is it as popular as ever, Lou? How is the online internet poker world going right now?
Well, is it as popular as ever is a complex question. It's probably got as many players as ever. It's got fewer in the United States these days. The result of the Unlawful Internet Gaming Enforcement Act that was passed in October that made it difficult to impossible for players to move money into their online accounts. And that took a number of the big poker sites like Party Poker and drove them from being U.S.-facing sites to becoming Euro and Asian-facing sites, and they gave up their American business and are now concentrating on the European and Asian market. However, sites like PokerStars and Full Tilt Poker, PokerStars is probably the biggest online poker room in the world, are still serving American customers.
Right, I know. It's very interesting. So the law stated that the providers of the internet or the online internet poker sites could not operate out of the U.S.
No, actually what it did is it made it illegal to move money back and forth into those accounts, and banks have to code transactions, and it didn't criminalize anything about poker. Poker is still not illegal. You can play poker legally. But what it did was attack poker by going after the money.
See, I'm very interested in just asking you this question again because most people have heard that it's illegal to play online poker in the United States. That seems to be what this whole thing boiled down to. But what you just said actually negates that belief because you're saying that they did not criminalize the opportunity to play online poker. They just made it illegal to move money back and forth.
Yeah, you know, the law is called the Unlawful Internet Gaming Enforcement Act. So the word enforcement is interesting. It's not a law that that created any new classes of crimes. So what was illegal beforehand is still illegal. What was legal beforehand is still legal. There's no law that says you can't play online poker in the United States. And I have money in PokerStars, and when I play poker at PokerStars, poker stars. I'm not violating any federal law. And the difficulty is, of course, moving money back and forth mm-hmm. into these accounts. You can still do it, but it tends to be either time-consuming or very expensive.
I see. Well, that's an interesting perspective, and I appreciate you sharing that with us. So hey, all of us who play online, we're not breaking any rules.
You're not breaking any laws.
I think we're all happy to hear that,
nobody
actually.
Nobody is going to come to your door and arrest you in your jammies for playing poker.
Well, you know how it is. Now we can play relaxed and not worried. Right?
You can. Just sit there and play and know that... Even if the Department of Justice has FBI agents outside your door, they're not coming in.
All right. Well, I really... See, Lou, you are such a pro, and you really know the industry. I want to let everyone know who's listening today. If you listen to our previous podcasts, which are all on our stream, that you can reach on iTunes, just put in the keyword poker, and they'll all come down for you, is that Lou predicted that the WSOP this year, and you almost probably got it exactly right, I got to say, because someone drew that to my attention, that Lou Krieger was absolutely right. I had asked you a question. I said, so the year before, what, we were up to 10,000 or
no,
so?
No, it was 8776 or
the
something
year before.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And we were projecting. We were saying, well, is it going to be over 10? And, you know, really expecting it. And, Lou, you had such foresight, and you said, I don't think so. I think we're going to see a decrease in the numbers this year. And you even gave me a range. And sure enough, you fell right within that range. And one of our listeners said that Lou Krieger was exactly right. The guy's brilliant.
Wow.
And you were right. So I want to just ask you about then any trends that you see in the industry, because you certainly seem to know and you're able to forecast very nicely from what I've seen so far. Any forecast for us in terms of the growth of poker, casino poker, let's say, or even do you see the WSOP changing over the years, maybe splitting into, you know, more than one event?
Well, it's already doing that. Right now, next week, I think, they're having... 3 World Series of Poker events in London, and they're going to be awarding bracelets to the winners, and so they are taking the World Series of Poker and going on the road with it. If they're having events in London, there's nothing to stop the World Series of Poker from
going everywhere,
having events in Barcelona mm-hmm. and you know, Vienna, you name it.
Do you know, are 3 separate, like, series of World Series of Poker events where they have for anywhere from whatever 10
No, they're 15? Having 3 separate tournaments. There's
three separate
no-limit hold'em tournament, a pot limit Omaha event,
okay.
and a horse event. Now, these are going to be smaller than the events in Las Vegas because there is no casino in London big enough to hold those kinds of crowds. So they're having the events spread out over 3 different casinos, and I think they are capping the entries at 700. And
well,
the reason they're doing that is that's all the players they can accommodate.
Well, so this is in London. When did you say this is going to occur?
I believe it starts next week.
Oh, wow. We're just going to have to check this out, really. I wonder if they're going to be broadcasting live or one of the pay-per-view here.
I don't know if they're doing pay-per-view, but you can get live blogs of the results as they're coming in.
Okay. Well, this should be great, and I can't wait to see if our favorite players all wind up in the money over there.
I don't know. I'm not sure how many Americans are going over there. I'm sure some are. I know people that are over there now. So it'll be a combination of American players and European pros.
So here we go. You know, here we go. The competition, you know, goes on. So
it does go on. I mean, it takes a little breath right after the World Series of Poker, and then it just goes on again.
You know, you were saying that earlier, that right now you can almost hear a pin drop in Las Vegas. And I think what we meant by that is, yeah, why don't you expand on this, is the WSOP just finished in Las Vegas recently, like last month, and it's quiet. Right
it is quiet. I think it's a time when everybody sits back and exhales. Remember, it wasn't just the World Series of Poker in Las Vegas that was going on. At the same time, you had a World Poker Tour event at the Bellagio. You had the Venetians month-long deep stack series. You had a month-long series of tournament events at Binion's. So it was really a feeding frenzy of poker. And I think once that's over, a lot of the pros that did well go on vacation for a couple of weeks.
Sure.
I think the people, for every one person that comes there and wins money, there are lots of players that go to Las Vegas and they come back with their bankroll severely depleted, if non-existent. So now they've got to exhale. They've got to get over the depressing feelings of having been a big loser, and they have to come up with a plan to rebuild and reinfuse their bankroll. And for a couple of weeks after the World Series of Poker, there really are no big major tournaments anywhere. And then you have the Bicycle Casino in L.A. They have their Legends of Poker tournament, which takes place over the entire month of August and just ended yesterday. And then that's followed by a month-long September tournament series at the Commerce Casino in L.A. And then you have things like the World Series of Poker London event and the European Poker Tour, which is going on right now, has a World Poker Tour event in Barcelona. So poker's starting to pick up again, and it really won't slow down until the natural hiatus that occurs over the holidays.
All right. So in terms of the future, because, I mean, obviously when you watch the shows, they're on the major networks here in the U.S., we have major advertisers backing a lot of the poker events. If you watch the shows here, you'll see that a lot of the men's products come in, very big name companies supporting, buying the sponsorships, buying the advertising time in these events. So that suggests to me that, of course, they've identified this as a very huge growth market and a great demographic for them. What do you think, Lou? Are we just really on the cusp of enormous poker growth, or where do you think we are in the cycle?
Well, it looks to me like there's at least 5 years left of good growth. I mean, poker is sort of like the reality show craze that was on television.
Right.
It attracts things like Survivor. I mean, they attracted a core of 18 to 35 year olds. It's great demographics. In terms of TV programming, it's wonderful, because it's inexpensive to produce. You're not paying $1 million per episode to a star to appear on it. You have a bunch of poker players who are paying their money to play in a tournament, they're paying their money. Some are winning everybody else's money, but in terms of production costs, it's pretty cheap, and television likes that. Their production costs are low. Their viewership is high, so from a perspective of somebody producing television, what's not to like?
You know, we're going to revisit this topic because it's fascinating to watch the growth of poker, but you're feeling that we have not peaked yet. You're feeling
I think we haven't peaked, and I think more importantly, Annie, is that as people watch poker on television, that just propels more and more people into casinos near their house.
Oh, sure.
Or into online poker, but they see it and they want to play it. And
they
want to play it because they can win.
And they may not know what it is, but they know they want it.
No, but the thing is, they can win. It's not like you're going to
put up
your own money and you're going to play golf against Tiger Woods. You're going to play one-on-one basketball with Kobe Bryant. Well,
sure.
You know, maybe it'd be worth it to play one-on-one against Kobe one time,
name-dropping rights.
if your bankroll is dependent on beating him, that's not going to happen.
No, you're right. The only thing standing between, you know, you and beating a pro is just knowledge and I'll have to say a little luck.
A little luck, and you know, in the short run, in poker, there's a lot of luck, and
yes, you're right.
That's good. It's good that the bad players get lucky and win, because if they never got lucky, they would stop coming to the card room. Eventually, you know, all but the most masochistic would cease coming back.
Yeah, I'll say it's a very psychologically tough game, and maybe we want to profile, you know, the psychological components that go into being a very strong winning poker player. Ability to come back, ability to face confrontation, ability to be aggressive when necessary, change gears. I mean, these are psychological components. You know what? I always say now, I'm starting to really believe that the way you play poker is the way you play life.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, some people say that poker builds character, but I think that it doesn't build it so much as it reveals character.
Yeah.
It's easy to be cool and on top of everything and to do and say the right thing when you're winning, when life is a bowl of cherries.
Sure.
But when things get tough, when you really have to fight yourself as your own worst enemy, it's not so easy to be that way. And that's why you see people that away from the poker table are affable and nice people, and you put them under a little bit of stress, they're faced with losing a lot of money or making bad decisions or the turn of a card, bad luck crucifies them, and their personality changes completely. They fly completely open, and they're a different person under stress than they are under conditions of calmness.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, you're only as strong as your weakest link, I always like to say. So that moment of intense stress does reveal the weakest link.
Yeah, and people differ. Some people under pressure become very different. Some become overly aggressive and, you know, like a cornered animal, they try to fight their way out. Others become under stress, very, very passive, and they want to just hunker down. They want to get in the foxhole and you know, pull the covers over them to mix analogies. But people have different kinds of responses to stress than the way they behave when they're in a
mm-hmm.
stress-free situation.
Sure, sure, because I happen to notice when I feel my stress, I get very smart fast. I notice that my senses open up a lot, and I'm open to a lot more information. I notice that, and I'm very willing to play an intellectual game when I feel under stress, that I really, really have to win. It's like all of a sudden, okay, we need to pay attention to every little thing going on, get all the information we can. So I notice that about myself. But there you go. It's very interesting. You know thyself. This becomes true in the poker
yeah,
world.
Yeah, so under stress, you tend to retreat and bury yourself in the data and look
and
for...
get very smart, yeah. Get
look
very
for the
smart.
Rationale to get out. Other people just hide.
Mm-hmm.
Still other people say the hell with the data. They're going to blast forward, kick
anyway,
down the doors,
yeah.
and just run over everything in their path.
Yeah, I try... You know, it's interesting because I also believe poker players have a fallback strategy. Now, that could be the basic strategy that feels most comfortable, or even it could be their very first strategy that they learned as they were learning the game. So a fallback strategy is something that you kind of, perhaps even under stress, fall back on, which is interesting. So fallback strategy for me is playing very tight, and when I am tight, playing aggressive and in position. And I go back to that fallback strategy when I really need to work my way out of a jam. Of course, take some looser opportunities as well, but only ones that really have a high probability of paying off.
You know, that's the strategy for most people,
and
for good reason. I think that when you're losing, your opponents look at you as somebody that's easily beaten.
They're prey. I mean, they
and,
go out.
And
they
you're the wounded
after.
Animal. And you know, the wolves are going to chase down the wounded deer from the herd. That's the one they're going to kill. And you know, you look
yeah.
wounded. They're coming after you.
If you use that analogy, it doesn't sound like it's a very fun place to be, right? The poker table.
But the other thing is when because they're coming after you, you want to narrow the target. You want to just make the profile a little skinnier, so they have less to shoot at.
So do tell. What do you mean by that? Now let's get into some nuts and bolts of our podcast.
Okay, let's do that. When you're losing, you're going to play tighter. You're going to not take chances on hands. When you're dealt, say 10-9 suited in middle position, and nobody's raised, and you don't have, you haven't been winning, you're probably going to throw that hand away and wait for a bigger hand or a big pair to commit chips to the pot. Now, in a tournament, it's different. If you're losing and you're down to very, very few chips, you might just have to make a stand with almost anything because, you know, if you go all in and lose, you can't rebuy, you can't put more money on the table as you can in a cash game. So, but most players will stop playing those sort of gambling hands, a hand like 10-9 suited that if you get very, very lucky can make a straight or make a flush and win a big pot. You need a lot of callers to make it pay off in the long run, so you ideally want to play a hand like that when there are already a bunch of opponents in the pot, and hopefully some of them will pay you off if you get lucky. But when you are losing and you're being beaten up upon, you really want to play pots against few people where you really figure to have the edge and grind yourself back and change the image that your opponents have of you at that moment.
You know, it's interesting you say that. It's because you're right about that image thing. When somebody's really, you know, when they're almost on their way out, maybe a few hundred chips left or whatever, you definitely do look at them as fair game. And then when they do manage to pull themselves together and come back and over 1,000 chips and 2,000 chips and 3, you really, I'll tell you, I have a lot of respect for that player because he didn't go on tilt. He didn't just say, the hell with everything, I'm out of here. It was a very calculatingly brought their way, you know, bet their way or played their way back up. And yeah, I'm sure luck had a lot to do with that first all-in, and they probably won it to get, to increase their ability to fight back. But I've got to say, I do have respect for those players, and then I realized, you know, I always watch them at that point because I realize they know what they're doing.
Well, you know, what's important is that poker never... never ends. It's a never-ending game.
Oh, no.
I mean, think about if baseball weren't a series of nine-inning games. But what if baseball never ended? What if you played this season and you came back next season and it was still the same game and you're in the, you know, 45th, 1,000th inning? the runs you gave up in the fourth inning... would still be runs that your opponent had. You know, it's not like the game's over, it's a new game, it's 0-0 to start with. So money you lose today is money you have to earn back tomorrow.
Very good analogy.
And Mike Caro, the mad genius of poker, as he calls himself, has a concept that's very, very appropriate to this situation. He calls it the misery index.
Really?
And he says that once you've lost a certain amount of money in a setting, in one time at the poker room, and that amount's going to vary depending on the player. For some players, it might be a couple of $100. For other players, it might be a couple of $1,000. For very big players, it might be a couple of million. At some point, if you lose, let's say your misery, your threshold is $2,000, and you lose $2,000 in one sitting, it won't hurt you any more if you lose another $500 or another $1,000. It will afterwards. It will the next day when you wake up and say, "Oh my God, I lost $3,000," and because I played so poorly, I lost that extra $1,000. You might have lost the first $2,000 just because of bad luck, but that bad luck conspired to make you play very, very poor poker, and that cost you an additional $1,000. And Caro's idea is that once you reach a certain point, and you need to know what it is, once you reach that misery index, you really ought to stop playing because you are going to only cost yourself money. At that point, you've turned into your own worst enemy, not your opponent's.
Well, that's very interesting, and I want to thank you for sharing that with us. We're all going to have to check that out a little bit further, our misery indexes. I'll tell you what, I have a question for you. We've got some concepts common to poker games online, and we're going to talk about this in the context of winning online poker, since many of the people listening to our podcast don't necessarily have access to the big-time casinos like Atlantic City and some of the other ones, of course, Vegas, and many of them play in their home games, but lots are playing online. Right, Lou?
Right.
And this is from your wonderful book, Internet Poker, How to Play and Beat Online Poker Games. So I encourage everyone to check that out. Look for that on Amazon.com, along with Lou's other books. Lou, I think you're up to 9 books.
No, actually 11.
11. Wow.
And if they visit my website, www.loukrieger.com, all of the 11 books are shown there, and for each book there's a link tab called Contents, and they can click on that and get a really good idea of what's in the book and what level player it applies to, and they can decide whether that particular book is a book that's aimed at them or not.
Well, that sounds wonderful, and I appreciate you set it up that way. And I wanted to ask you now, we're going to talk about some common concepts, and this is, again, taken from his book, Internet Poker, How to Play and Beat Online Poker Games. So we want to talk initially, we're going to talk about discipline. And I don't know if anyone likes to hear discipline, but I'm telling you, it is absolutely critical to playing winning poker. But I wanted to get Lou's perspective on the role of discipline. If you could explain discipline as it applies to poker playing, and where people fall short in discipline, and why it's so critical, and, of course, when it's critical. So I know I asked you a loaded question there, but I think discipline is probably extremely key. What do you think, Lou?
Oh, yeah, it's certainly key, and it's a lot of question more than a loaded question.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have discipline, you're going to wind up playing far too many hands. You're going to start entering pots with hands like 4-5 offsuit, and these are hands that figure the likelihood of them winning in the long run is slim.
Likelihood.
So if you're not selective about the hands you play, you have almost no chance of being a winning poker player. In fact, I would say you have no chance of being a winning poker player. So is there a need for discipline? Absolutely. It's no different than a baseball player having discipline when he comes up to bat and waiting for a pitch to hit that he feels he can do something with, and taking the pitch that's in a place where he doesn't feel like he can make good contact with it. So you need discipline. Now, in an online game, discipline is more difficult than it is in a traditional brick-and-mortar card room, and let me explain why. When you're playing online, you're the only one that's there, and you're playing under an avatar, under a screen name. You know, you might be playing under the screen name White Hot Hen, and nobody knows who White Hot Hen is in the real world. So you can play like a complete donkey, and, you know, your next-door neighbor might have been at the same table playing under a different screen name.
Right.
He doesn't know who you are, and you don't know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not going to know that you made a complete ass of yourself last night playing poker.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if you're in a brick-and-mortar card room, even with a bunch of strangers, they're looking at you, and they're scrutinizing your play as you're scrutinizing theirs. They're trying to get a handle on how you play. They want to learn what you do, why you do it, when you do it, and nobody likes looking foolish. No one. And so the very fact that there are other players at the table and they're looking at you, even if you'll never see them again, you don't like to look like an idiot in front of other people.
Not at
and
all.
So you have more constraints on you, which serve to sort of as a
collective device.
Something that prevents you.
Right.
It serves to prevent you from going over the top and off the edge and playing completely insane. Now, if you're at home, you can go completely nuts.
Let me ask
losing and throw your money away.
Yeah. I got a question. Some people have favorite hands, and they're not what you think. They're 2-4 of hearts. They're 2-4 unsuited. You know, they love to play the Queen of Hearts no matter what it comes up with. Do you like the favorite hand? Do you have any favorite hands? And do you like people?
Well, let me say this. If their favorite hand is Deuce-4, it's going to win in the long run as often as Deuce-4 figures to win statistically, which isn't very much. Now, why is it their favorite hand? Because probably when they first started playing poker, they won a big pot with it.
Mm-hmm.
Against all odds.
Against all odds. I love that.
And that's the secret of hands. They are against all odds hands.
That's
now,
right.
Can you play hands like that? You can in a no-limit game, because in a no-limit cash game or in a no-limit tournament when you have lots of chips, or it's very early in the tournament and everybody has lots of chips relative to the size of the blinds, in no limit you can play hands that are real underdogs in hopes of a miracle occurring on the flop.
Yeah.
And that miracle flop will then let you take somebody's entire stack
exactly.
of chips.
That's exactly.
Now, if you're playing in a limit game,
mm-hmm.
You can have that same miracle happen, but the implied odds, the amount that you can win,
mm-hmm.
is limited by the size or amount you can bet.
I think what you just said is really some advanced poker skills. You see the pros play the 2-4s, the 3-5s, the 5-6, whatever. You know, and they do that, see the flop cheaply as possible, right? And then if you get your miracle flop, bingo. You know, you're in a great position to take down a beautiful pot. That sets you up to have future investment capital in terms of chips to play around with.
Yeah. Now, here's a typical kind of thing you'll see in a high-stakes cash game. Somebody raises 3 times a blind,
right.
And you're sitting there with 6-5 of diamonds, and you call. Now, you're a big underdog. You know that he didn't raise with a lesser hand than 6-5 of diamonds.
Correct.
So he's either got a big pair or he's got big cards like ace king or ace queen.
Mm-hmm.
Chances are, just because of the mathematics of the situation, he figures to have big cards more than he figures to have a big pair. You call. You're still an underdog. Now you're hoping for a real small flop, even if it misses your 6-5 entirely. Suppose the flop is 7-3.
Mm-hmm.
And now the guy that raised comes out betting. You can raise him. You're saying chances are he has big cards rather than a big pair. And if I raise him, he's probably going to have to throw his hand away.
Putting you on possibly trips.
Yeah, putting me on trips. Or even a pair at that point, he's a big underdog.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And if you catch a miracle flop, suppose the flop, you had 6-5 of diamonds, and the flop is just what you're hoping it is, 6-5 king. Now you're hoping he has ace king, because you've got two pair. And he bets, and you put in a small raise, and he raises you, and you put them all in, you've got two pair, and you're a big favorite.
And that's how these poker tournaments... Do you ever notice how the big pros, they wind up at the final tables with huge, massive amounts of chips?
And that's how they do it.
That's how they play the game over and over again throughout the many, many days at the table. But again, that's advanced poker strategy. And Lou, you will be with us when we get to the advanced strategy part of our podcast series here.
I hope so.
You're not going anywhere, buddy.
I'm not going anywhere. But let me reiterate that kind of strategy, mm-hmm. is not so good in a fixed limit game, because even if the hand plays out the same way,
right?
You know, you're going to win a nice pot that time, but you're not going to win all of somebody's chips, and you're not going to win enough to overcome the amount you'd lose on all the other occasions that you'd play that kind of garbage hand and have to throw it away after the flop.
Correct. Well, thank you for clarifying that for us. And I love talking advanced poker strategy. Let's get a few more of these basics down, and then, of course, Lou will be back with lots of advanced strategy. Meanwhile, everyone, play get out there, play, test out different strategies so that when we get to the advanced part of the game, you really understand, you know, where we want to go with the conversation and with some of the hands that Lou's going to share with us in various ways to play them. Meanwhile, though, we're on to our next, oh, this is a good one about tilt. Losing hands, folding tilt, losing hands, whatever. Whatever kind of tilt you people go on at the table. So why don't we talk about the types of tilt people can go on. You've, of course, lost a hand you're favored to win, unfortunately. We know that does happen, unfortunately. Big, big problem for going on tilt. And there's something called folding tilt, Lou, where you're almost, you're not sure if you're going to be want to go. You say, oh, I'm going to fold. And then there you go. You would have flopped the nut flush.
Woulda, shoulda, coulda.
Talk about, what does that do to you? And then you do it again.
And then the next time
you say, no, can't have it twice in a row. Sure enough, oh, my God. So tell us a little bit about tilt. And, you
I
know,
think,
really,
the more I think
test?
About it,
yeah.
the more I think that tilt is really something that occurs when people personalize what happens to them at the poker table. And the thing that happens to them isn't good. So if you personalize things that happen to you at the poker table and you win, you're happy. Boy, do the poker gods favor me today.
And you're lucky and you're a genius.
That's my favorite dealer. I am lucky. I am the best poker player that ever lived. Now, when it doesn't happen that way, when you lose a few hands in a row, some players personalize that, and they have a tendency to blame the dealer, to blame the online poker room is cheating them.
Right.
The players are conspiring against them. Who knows what else?
Sure.
But they get so emotionally drawn into this
that they are only as good as their last hand.
Yeah, they cease to make good decisions, and they start making emotionally driven decisions, and they're usually not the right, the correct, the logical, the best decision under the circumstances. So what happens is they squander their money. And that's it. They squander their money because they want payback, and they want it now.
Love it. I love the way you describe that. Tell us, though, is detachment to the outcome one of the keys to avoiding tilt?
Oh, of course it is, and it's very easy to talk about that, and I think every poker player knows that you have to be detached from the outcome, but when it's your money on the line, it's very difficult to maintain that sense of detachment, that sense of being involved in it, yet being able to remove yourself from it emotionally so that you can command your forces and make the best decisions under the circumstances. We talked about poker revealing character, and some people are very different kinds of animals when they're stressed and losing than when they're happy and winning and life is just generally fine. And the people that go through those dramatic personality changes are the ones that are prone to go on tilt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, remember the comic strip, the movie, The Incredible Hulk?
Mm-hmm.
When he got angry, he turned into this huge green guy.
Funny.
It's the same thing playing poker.
That would be a great handle, a great moniker, The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, so if you have
if you, the listener of
this has a tendency to go on tilt and get too emotionally involved, you are turning into The Incredible Hulk, so just...
Especially if you
don't go on tilt.
Right. Name yourself Incredible Hulk and you'll fool everybody. You'll have everybody trying to put you on tilt.
Now, how do you do it? How do you control your emotions?
You know, that's the important question.
One thing to say you can do it. How do you actually go out and do it?
I don't know.
I don't know how you actually do it.
I was going to look for the secret. Because it's theoretical. You know, you can say detach from the outcome, et cetera. I'll tell you, it's just practice. And plus, to have a good core self-esteem. I am not my cards. You know, cards have a tendency to play out. I can make decisions based on the cards, and if I make wrong decisions, I can learn from my decisions.
That's right.
Sounds easy, but you know, unless you have a real passion and dedication to becoming a winning player, you may pass that one step of what was my role in the way this hand played out.
Yeah, well, you are not your cards, and I think that's a good thing for people to learn, and it it holds up in life as well. The thing that gets tough about this, though, is after you lose a number of hands, or you're losing for the day, or you're losing for the week, it's very natural to sit back and say, look, was it me or was it just a bad run of cards?
Mm-hmm. Which happened?
Did I lose all of this money because mm-hmm. of a series of against all odds, miraculous cards falling on the river that favored my opponent and not me?
Right.
Or did I play hands I shouldn't have played? Did I call bets I shouldn't have called? Or is there some combination, is it some combination of both? And I can deal with, I can't deal with the bad turns of cards. Those are uncontrollable, but my own stupidity I should deal with. And I think when you lose after you've been playing well, it's real natural to have self-doubt.
Sure.
And it happens to players at the highest level.
Mm-hmm.
There's a high-limit player who plays on high-stakes poker quite regularly.
Really?
Named Brian Townsend.
Mm-hmm.
And there are rumors all over the internet these days that he is quitting poker. And he said on his blog he's had a downswing over the past month or two. And when you're talking downswing with the limits he plays at,
mm-hmm.
the downswing is he's lost a couple of million dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote on his blog he's playing 200, 400.
Mm,
no limit hold'em.
Wow.
The blinds are 200, 400. No limit hold'em. And was totally unmotivated, and it was the first time in a long time he didn't want to play poker, and he thinks one of the reasons is he's been losing a lot, and that's definitely unmotivating, and he doesn't want to motivate himself to play poker if all it is to him is just a job or a way to make ends meet. So there's a guy that's playing at the very highest limits. I don't think there's anybody in the world playing much higher than 200, 400, no limit. That's the kind of betting structure where a loss of $500,000 in a single hand is entirely possible. Entirely possible.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's humongous limits.
Sure.
That's more, he'll play for more in a day than most of us will play for in a lifetime. And,
mm-hmm.
and he's questioning himself, and he's having self-doubts, and he's wondering, you know, is it, remember that old commercial, is it me or Memorex?
I know.
You don't know whether it's you who's at fault or somebody else. Poker players don't have coaches. We don't have somebody looking at every hand we play and reviewing them with us. I mean, world-class chess players, when they play in a tournament, they all have seconds. They have other grandmasters who will watch them and record the play, and at night after the day's play is over, they'll go over each move in each game that the grandmaster played and try to dissect where he might have made an error or not.
Mm-hmm.
Tennis players have coaches, you know, in the grandstand, and they're watching their player play, and they'll get with them and say, well, you should have done this, you should have done that, yada, 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 and they'll dissect the game. But poker players are there by themselves, and it's very, very hard to be completely objective about yourself and with yourself. And sometimes, even if you are very objective, you simply don't know whether what happened was a function of good luck or bad luck or your own poor play.
Question for you, Lou. Do you believe in lucky streaks?
Well, there are lucky streaks for sure. There are streaks that are positive and streaks that are negative. Now, are those lucky or not? Well, they're all within the parameters of variance. You know, if you are a player who's good and you figure to win on the average one big bet an hour, that doesn't mean that every hour you're going to win a bet and go on to the next hour and win a bet. You're going to have ups and downs, and it's going to be a jagged line. It's going to look like, if you looked at a graph of the stock market for last week, you'll see ups, downs, ups, downs, ups, downs. if you look at a graph of the stock market from 1990 through today, you'll see a pretty smooth straight line trending upwards.
Right, of course. But on a daily basis, there's a lot of swings in there, too.
Yeah, there. So if you're a great player, you are going to lose, and you are going to have protracted losing streaks. Let's take Brian Townsend, for example. He's at a level where he can afford a loss of $2.5 million in a month and a half. Now, he got that money by playing poker and winning it. Now, did his poker skills deteriorate that much in a month and a half? I don't think so. I think, they may have gone down a little bit as his luck went bad. His skill might have gone down a little bit. He might have played below his optimum ability, but he didn't turn from a great poker player into a horrible poker player instantly. So,
well, he would be a great case study, actually.
There are loads of case studies of players in tournaments that come up and they'll win a tournament and they'll win another tournament and they'll place high in another tournament, and you won't hear from them again for a year and a half.
Right, right.
It's just a lot of fluctuation along the road to a predictable average amount of money won or lost.
That's right. And, this brings us to the next conversation, because one thing you like to say in your book, Internet Poker, How to Play and Beat Online Poker Games, is there's a difference between winning pots and winning money, right?
Oh, sure there is.
Yeah,
separating
winning poker players from consistent losers. So you like to say that selective and aggressive play separates winning poker players from consistent losers. And the fact that you need to be winning pots, right, and or winning money. So why don't you explain what the difference between winning pots is versus winning money, and, of course, which is better?
Well, look, nobody goes to the card room or online to play poker because somebody has a gun at their head and is forcing them to do so. They go there because they like poker. It is enjoyable. It is fun. It's challenging. They want to play poker. And the tendency is, of course, to play too many hands rather than to play too few hands. Now, if you think that you're there to win pots, I can tell you how to win every pot it's possible to win. And that's play every hand until the bitter end. And if you play every hand and you call every bet until the river, you will win, I guarantee it, every pot it's possible for you to win. You won't leave any money on the table, but you'll lose your entire bankroll in the process over a period of time because you're playing too many hands, you're playing weak hands, you're making bad decisions, and in the long run, your money is flowing out rather than coming in. So you want to be selective. You want to play fewer than every hand. In fact, you want to play far fewer than every hand. You want to play the hands that figure to give you a decent shot of winning more in the long run with those hands than they'll cost you on those occasions when you lose with them.
Now, Lou, from the top of your head, can you give us some cases of what you feel are winning starting hands?
Okay. Do you want to talk about limit poker or no limit poker?
I always like no limit. I mean, if you're going to play the game, you might as well play with no limits. Hey, that's just my personality. I don't play limit poker, but for those of us who are playing no limit, we'll start there.
Okay, let's look at no limit. Mm-hmm. First of all, in no limit, position is absolutely critical.
Yeah.
And there are hands that you will throw away in early position that you would raise with under the right circumstances in late position. Now, you're going to play aces, kings, queens, jacks, and tens in any position. You'll probably play ace-king in any position, ace-queen in any position. Now, as you go down in the playing order, if there are a number of people in the pot already and the pot hasn't been raised, the door is open to play those suited connectors, kind of hands like 10-9, 9-8, 8-7, all suited, that do well with a lot of opponents, because if they win, they tend to make a very big hand, and if you don't catch any part of the flop, you can easily throw them away.
Yeah, I just want to call, wait one second, my listeners to the attention. You just said, though, in an unbroken pot.
An unraised pot,
so that means lots of limpers, lots of callers.
Lots of limpers.
Mm-hmm. All right, so just that's one thing to keep in mind when you see those suited connectors and you're in a pot where that's unraised, there's lots of people are limping in, that's a good time for you to get in. And would you just limp along?
Oh, yeah, sure, because you don't want to, you want to see the flop inexpensively. Mm-hmm. Chances are you're going to throw your hand away on the flop, and you want to encourage more players to limp. These are hands where you want a lot of customers.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to play on the cheap. You want to make a big hand, not have it cost much money, and you want to take somebody's entire stack when you make a hand.
I think that's great. And being able to add playing suited connectors to your arsenal of hands that you know how to play well from every position is important, don't you think? And in going from almost making the money to making the money to even winning?
Of course it is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you had a suited connector like 7-6 and you're first to act, you're under the gun, well, that's a hand that, as we said, needs a lot of opponents to make it worthwhile, to give you the right price to play it. If you're under the gun and you've got seven other people to act after you do, you don't have any idea whether those people are going to call or fold or raise, or whether there'll be a raise and a re-raise. You have no idea what's going to happen. Now, if everybody folds, then you're playing 7-8 under the gun against the two blinds, who are random hands, and you're still probably going to have to hit your hand to win, because one of the two blinds figures to have a hand bigger than 8 high. If you're raised and you've got a lot of callers, you know, it's up to you. You can gamble and hope to hit a miraculous hand, or you can throw your hand away.
Uh-huh.
If it's raised and re-raised, I would throw it away all the time. So you don't know what's going to happen if you play a hand that requires a certain set of circumstances,
right,
and you're early to act. If you need a lot of opponents, you have no guarantee whether you're going to get one more player in there, or no more players, or five more players.
Sure.
So those suited connectors are horrible to play under the gun. They do better in late position when everything is known to you about the number of players who are going to be in the pot, and whether there are any players who have raised and are therefore telling you, I have a big hand, get out of my pot.
So I have a question for you. Do you have a labeling strategy or a way that you identify the players that you play with in terms of studying your opponents and trying to put them on a style of play so that you can get a little bit of an edge or advantage for yourself? Do you have one that you use particularly, or that you advise, that you like to advise people to use?
There are loads of categorization methods out there, and some have there are some cute ones. There are some that have animal names. You know,
right,
you have a bear and a lion and a jackal.
Mm-hmm. That's Helmuth, by the way. I remember.
I don't do that. When I play online, I take notes about my opponents.
No.
Because you know, the site facilitates that. It has a note-taking function.
What's a sample note that you would put in? Can you give us a real-life example, perhaps? I know I'm you know, asking you to do this off the top of your head, but let's say you notice somebody likes to, you know.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Give us an example and what you would note about that player. Like, what's the note that makes sense that next time you read the note, you know what you said? Yeah, it made sense at the time, but, you know, you've got to have some consistency in the note-taking so that you can remember what we were
saying. Yeah, here's an example. Cold called a raise, called all the way to the river with second pair and three opponents.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
There's a calling station. I'm not going to try to bluff that guy ever, because he's going to call. What I'm going to do is take my good hands, I'm going to bet them for value, and he's going to call, and I'm going to win those extra bets.
Now, how many times do you have to see this person do this to know that you want to label them a calling station?
Well, I will do it the first time I see it, and I, you know, I'm never so sure of my notes that I'm unwilling to change it. If I see different behavior, I'm going to change it.
Got it. Or notes.
You know, I've had notes on players. One that went something like, plays very solid, but if he goes on tilt, he goes way on tilt.
He goes bye bye.
Yeah, you know, he's playing perfect by the book.
By the book poker.
Solid poker, and if he takes a bad beat, he's just going to throw off money for the next 20 minutes.
So what would you write? What would you write in your note section there?
On my note section?
Yeah. What you just said, he's plays solid player.
Solid most of the time. Goes on tilt after bad beat in a big way or something
okay,
like that.
Okay, something like that, yeah. Okay, yeah. That's good. Do you ever notice the starting hands and take note of the starting hands?
Oh, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Especially, yes, if they're what I consider an unusual starting hand they played, you know, called with 6-4 under the gun.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
You know, if somebody raises with ace-king, I'm not going to note that. I expect everybody to raise with ace-king.
Sure, exactly. So if someone called with 6-4 under the gun, what would you label them? What type of player?
I'd note that, and I'd that's one I'd look for a couple of times. And you know, I would label him a fish, complete
mm-hmm.
fish.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. That's good. Of course, in later stages of poker, I know that sometimes, you know, people are very trappy. You know, in the later stages of a tournament.
Yeah, I was talking about a cash game. In a tournament, yes. Yeah, especially when you're shorthanded, you've mm-hmm. got to try to trap. You know, you're not dealt big hands mm-hmm. often enough that you can
right.
afford to bet and just win the...
Mm-hmm.
The blinds. You want to yes. make a lot of money, so
very interesting.
You take
tournament.
A chance.
You know, we're gonna have
call.
You back, right, to talk about that tournament strategy at every stage of the every stage of the levels.
Yeah, it's just important to know that for it's like Newton's third law of motion. You know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So, if you try to trap with your pocket pair of aces. The good thing is you're going to trap people some of the time. The bad thing is you gave somebody a chance to see the flop inexpensively.
Uh-huh.
He's going to make two pair, and your pocket pair of aces are going bye-bye.
We've all been there, right, Lou?
So what I would tell people, what I have told people,
mm-hmm.
is if you're going to play that style, if you're going to try to trap, if you're going to try to be deceptive, and you're not prepared to fold big hands.
That's right. Key.
Don't play that style.
Don't play that style. All right. Now, can you say that again? Let's go over this one more time, because what you said is absolutely brilliant. It's okay to play, you know, the trapping style with your pair of aces, right?
It is.
But
if you're not willing, or you find yourself unable to release a pocket pair of aces or pocket kings or pocket queens... on the flop or after, you shouldn't play that
mm-hmm.
trapping style, because what you'll be doing is trapping yourself.
And this goes back to our earlier conversation when we talked about how to become a winning player is knowing thyself. All right?
Of course.
And paying attention to yourself, saying, I can't play that way. I'm sorry, but I'm not able to release the hand. I'm not going to play that way. And that's just your rule. And until you're able to release a hand, you really have to live by the rules that work for you.
You know, there was a comic strip, and mm-hmm. it's no longer with us because the creator is no longer with us, the guy that drew the strip. It was called Pogo. It was drawn by Walt Kelly. And Pogo was a philosophical possum that lived in the Okefenokee Swamp. And Pogo's tagline was, "We have met the enemy, and he is us." Now,
you got it.
There's no better example of meeting the enemy, and he is us, than you setting up a beautiful trap for your opponent, and because you're unwilling to fold the hand you have, you step in the trap instead of him.
Oh, wow. That's perfect. And you know what? That's a perfect note to wrap up our podcast. I'm sorry to say we've been on the line here, believe it or not, 1 hour.
It flew by.
Flew by, as always with you, Lou. You're absolutely amazing. Your insight is incredible, and you've given us a lot of really good really good ideas and very good strategies and lots of things to just take with us and think about. I encourage everyone to listen again and again because, as we know, every time you listen, you pick up more and more of Lou's wisdom, which is important. Of course, Lou has 11 books, right?
Yes, I do. And why don't you tell them that they can hear us together live on Wednesday, September 12th on Hold'emRadio.com.
Now, be there or be square. This is what I want all you wonderful thousands. Lou, tens of thousands of people listen to our podcast. I want to, of course, thank everyone for being on the line with us. We love you. And if possible, Wednesday night, September 12th, okay, this is U.S.-based, September 12th, that's a Wednesday night, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time.
5 o'clock Pacific Time.
There you go. At www.hold'emradio.com, hold'emradio.com. Look for that 8 o'clock hour. You'll see Annie Jennings. My guest will be Lou Krieger that evening. And we're going to have, this is the fun part, we're going to have one of those poker young guns that take down the big tournaments will be with us, Fast Eddie. So you're a great chance. Lou, you'll enjoy meeting Fast Eddie. Get into the mind of one of these young guns in the poker world today. So lots of fun.
I am looking forward to it.
All right, guys. So we're going to be September 12th, 8 p.m. Meet me my place. Hold'em Radio.
Be there or be square.
You got it. Now, Lou, tell us about one more time your site. I know you got a blog.
Yeah, I do. It's my website where they can find out a lot of information about each of my books is www.loukrieger.com. And I have a blog, and the blog is http://loukrieger.blogspot.com.
Well, I feel like giving you a standing ovation for today. That's how I feel about the great job you did, and I'm sure all of our listeners feel the same way. So, hey, wherever you are right now, put a big smile on your face and let's give it up for Lou Krieger. Yeah, man.
Thank you. You're too kind. I really enjoyed it. I look forward to being back and to chatting with you on the radio in a couple of weeks.
I can't wait. We'll see you then, and thanks to everyone for listening. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Annie.
My pleasure. All right, terrific. You there still?
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay, and that was good.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you. Yeah, the hour flew.
flew, but you did great. Lots of good stuff. I definitely want to come back and do poker strategy at different levels. I think that's going to be important.
Well, you sent me, you know, the sheet of things, and we covered about 2% of it.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it? Some
we
of the
covered,
things...
We covered... concepts common to poker games and win money when not pots and
then after that half
that page and the whole other page are still undone.
I know. So hey, let's just keep going. Why not? I'm sure. I'm hoping you're getting a lot of traffic. We really are. We're getting tens of thousands of listeners to our podcast, so you should be doing very well.
That's great.
On your website
and
book sales should be reflecting that. Hopefully, they can get the books. You know.
Oh, sure they can.
But good. Good. All right, then. So we're done for now. This will be up on our site very shortly on our podcast.
Okay.
Stream.
Just let me know when you want to do it again. I'm game.
Okay. Sounds good. So we'll plan it again for a week or two. Meanwhile, we look forward to having you on the show. Thanks
okay.
a lot, Lou.
All righty.
You've become a very good friend, and I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.